Welcome to the ADAA podcast about genetics of anxiety disorders. Today we're talking with Dr. Carrie Ressler at Emory University and Dr. Jordan Smoller at Massachusetts General Hospital. Let me ask you the first question about genetics and anxiety disorders. Are there new genetic findings in anxiety disorders?
Well, there are some very interesting findings that are emerging from the genetic research that's going on in anxiety disorders that suggest that variations in specific genes may be related to a variety of anxiety disorders, including panic disorder and obsessive compulsive disorder, and so on. We're still at a stage where these findings have not been conclusively established, and so we, for the first time, I think, have some of the tools that we need to actually go ahead and confirm some findings and make some new discoveries. So we have some of the earliest indications that, for example, variations in certain genes may affect how sensitive our emotion processing systems are in the brain, and that in turn may predispose us to anxiety disorders. And we've seen a number of genes like that. For a long time, we've known that genes play a role in anxiety disorders. The actual prospect of identifying which specific genes is only now unfolding.
An interesting point to add to that is a number of twin studies and other heritability studies over the years have suggested that anxiety, although we know is certainly affected by one's developmental history and environmental history, about 30 to 40% of the risk for anxiety is via genetic heritability, so that they are in part genetic disorders.
So if a gene is identified for a particular disorder, such as OCD, does that mean anybody who has that gene will get OCD or a predisposition? Is that more likely? And what does that mean really in terms from the therapist's perspective? What can a therapist tell a patient?
Well, that raises a very important point when we think about the genetics of things like anxiety disorders. We don't expect that they will be like other classic genetic disorders, like, say, sickle cell anemia or cystic fibrosis, where you have a mutation in a gene that means that you will develop the disorder. What we are seeing in anxiety disorders and in other common medical conditions like heart disease, etc., is that genes play a role, but each gene by itself probably contributes a relatively small amount. So when we find a gene or we believe we've found a genetic variation, it doesn't mean that one now has a test which will say with some certainty or probability that one is going to develop the disorder. One of the things that we hope as we find these genes is not so much that we will have an easy test, but we will learn something much more fundamental about the biology of these disorders, what is actually going on in the brain, and that may give us entirely new ways to intervene, both medication-wise and psychosocially and in terms of early intervention.
Following that idea, as far as how understanding the genetics may help us understand the disorders, as we know that many psychiatric disorders, certainly many anxiety disorders, are very heterogeneous, and so that we have limited diagnostic clinical ability to say that there is one type of OCD or one type of panic disorder, et cetera. As we understand more the genetic underpinning of these disorders, they may help us subtype the disorders so that we might eventually be able to find one type of OCD that has one type of genetic predisposition leading to one type of treatment that works better versus another.
And it would be understandable for therapists and consumers to be confused by all the headlines about genetics and the notion that, you know, we found the gene for this and we found the gene for that. In most cases, these are relatively important but small effects that tell us something about what the causes and opportunities to intervene in a disorder might be, but by themselves are not really explaining everything about the disorder. From a clinical perspective, I think we've known for some time some good, solid information about the fact that, for example, as Dr. Ressler was mentioning, if you have a first-degree relative, a mother, father, brother, sister, who has a disorder, whether it's OCD or panic disorder, et cetera, you have an elevated risk. And conversely, if you have the disorder, your relatives may have an elevated risk, and that risk can be up to 4 or 5 times what it might be in the general population. But since the frequency of these disorders is maybe about 3 to 5% in many cases, that doesn't mean certainly that if you have a family history, you're destined to have the disorder. And we know that genes play a role, but they are not destiny, and they are not going to predict with certainty. So I think that's something that's important for people to keep in mind, that they are a risk factor, but at this point they are not a determinative factor.
So in terms of treatment, from the consumer perspective, it's pretty much find a therapist that you're comfortable with and continue. So the findings of genetic links to anxiety disorders doesn't really change anything at the moment. Is that fair to say? Or and talk about intervention. Is there anything you can address about treatment that this that genetics might lead to?
Well, I think if anything at this point, some of the early work on the way that the genetics interacts with environment to predict risk for disorders even supports further the importance of certain types of psychotherapy in the treatment of anxiety disorders. Again, as has been said and Dr. Smoller pointed out, genes are not destiny, and we're not at the point, and we may or may not ever be to the point with psychiatry that any given single gene will have enough predictive power to say, predict the risk for a disorder. But it is showing increasingly that there are a number of genes which, in the presence of the right kind of trauma, either history of child abuse or adult trauma or adult stress, that the person at that point is at a higher risk for certain kinds of disorders. And again, not high enough risk to be predictive, but I think in a way in which helps us understand that the biology is supporting the role of the environment and the role potentially of psychotherapy on helping the patient to understand and recover from the disorder.
And I can't agree more. I think that some of this work on the interaction between genes and environment, ironically, is pointing up the importance of the environment, of the early environment, of stressors in daily life, financial stressors and other things that may be, for somebody who may have some genetic predisposition, may be increasing the likelihood that they will experience symptoms. And I think in addition to identifying which parts of the environment, either social or physical, may exacerbate risk, we're also starting to see studies that suggest that positive, nurturing environments may actually mitigate risk, and so that there is an interaction of genes and environment both on the downside, that is in increasing one's risk, but also in having protective effects. And that is really important because those are areas in which we can potentially intervene right now and not wait for the major genetic breakthrough that we're hoping might unlock everything. We're starting to see some pretty important findings, which again need to be followed up and seen in multiple studies, but that I think emphasize the way in which genetics teaches us not only about biology, but about the importance of environment and potentially psychotherapeutic interventions and so on.
Yes, in terms of research, are there areas that you would like to see, any important areas of research? You mentioned the positive effects of nurturing. Are there any other areas that you would put in your wish list of research areas?
Well, for me, I think that early environment and the interaction of genes and environment is certainly way up there. I think one of the things that people may or may not appreciate is that these studies really require many years and very large numbers of participants to really discover and confirm some of these effects. And people have just been tremendous in their willingness to volunteer for studies. And so one of my wishes is that people consider those kinds of things because they really do make a tremendous contribution to our trying to unravel these things when they participate in studies. And we're at a point in the field where our technology has really reached a pretty sophisticated level. And we are limited to some degree both by the logistics of funding and so on, but also just by the scale of studies that are needed to be done.
Yes, for many of the genetic studies, it sometimes takes tens of thousands of subjects to get the kind of power needed to understand the role of genes on these studies. So we can't say enough how important and grateful we in the field are for the volunteers that are involved.
Well, thank you very much, Drs. Ressler and Smoller. And this is Jean Kaplan-Tigro for ADAA.